Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gaming Moguls Podcast, where we're on episode 68. And yes, Martin Fowler is here for the second time in a row. Much like a stock value in an 18XX game, his appearances just keep paying dividends. Tonight we're tackling the age-old debate, what is and isn't a train game? Because apparently if you put a cube on a route and squint hard enough, everything's a train game. But tell that to the Ticket to Ride fans, and the 18XX crowd will rust your trains. So with that, we're going to kick into it. Martin, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. Certainly fun to have you back for a second time in a row. Last time it was all Euros all the time, and today it's going to be
train games.
All train games. Yeah, we had a lot of train games to talk about last time. And, you know, once we hit the hour and 48 minute mark or whatever that marathon turned into, we decided to cut it and make this a second party. Martin, you got me thinking this week. You write a blog post over on Board Game Geek that I've definitely been catching up on here recently since our last podcast. And your most recent one has been actually diving into and examining what actually makes up a train game. And it's sort of one of those things like, you know, art and pornography, you know it when you see it, but how do you actually define it? And, you know, I would love to actually hear your thoughts a little bit on what makes up the pornography that is train games.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's something that varies a lot from person to person. So for me, it's a case of, does something feel like a train game? But I want to go a bit more beyond that and examine, why do some games feel like a train game to me while other games don't? Sure. And I don't think it comes down to, you know, whether actually the game's got trains in it, as one of the games we'll talk about later on is a train game and is set in space. So there are no trains.
I'm going to talk about one that involves hotels.
Exactly. So trains aren't the essence of it, although they are a very common feature. I mean, a lot of train games do involve trains. But also, I think that's, for me, not a factor, because I'm actually not excited by trains. I'm not the kind of person who pours over pictures of trains, and I never went train spotting as a kid or anything like that. So trains don't excite me. So there's something else in train games that makes me a train gamer. And I think it comes down more to mechanisms, and sure, to two mechanisms in particular. The first one, and I think the primary one for me, is route building, or route building, depending on where we are, because I've got to be careful about saying things like route building for our Australian listeners.
It's all Minneapolis. You got to say route.
Route. Yeah. So with route building, I mean, the pleasure for me is, you know, you've got this map. You've got to make connections. You've got to decide what connections to make. You're trying to optimize it according to whatever the game is setting up for you to make a good route. And of course, everybody else is busily trying to do the same thing on the same map and getting in your way. It's that clash and contention between people. And also for me, the essence of engaging with maps. I've always was somebody who loved maps as a kid. So getting on a map really makes it interesting to me. And then the second mechanism is about financial management. When I think of train games, I often think of games where you've got an amount of money that you've got to handle. You've got to decide, where am I going to spend it? How do I accumulate it? Do I need more? How am I going to get more? And movement of money and looking after money so that you're dealing with a financial thing as well as a route building thing. And as we see as we go through the examples, that is secondary to some degree. But when I think of, you know, what are the classic train games, I tend to think of three main train families: 18XX, Age of Steam, and Cube Rails. All of those three families of games have this combination of route building and financial management that makes them a very strong aspect. Now, not everybody will agree on those mechanisms. I remember getting into one discussion where some people felt that stockholding was a necessary mechanism of train game. It's true for 18XX and for many Cube Rails games, but that, of course, would mean Age of Steam isn't a train game, which to me just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you got to stretch over pretty far backwards to think that Age of Steam is not a train game full blast.
Yeah. So that's how I tend to look at it. And that, but of course, the real test is when you start looking at games that are sitting around on the boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a bit different background and interest in train games. I did come from a train background. My father always has been super interested in trains. In fact, in his retirement, he owns a hobby business and travels around to kind of the entire Midwest, even well into his 80s, doing railroad train shows every weekend where he sells model railroading supplies and memorabilia and books and videotapes and all of that. And I think a large number of vacations when I was a kid somehow involved chasing trains, whether it was going to Colorado and watching the Union Pacific cross the mountains there, or whether it was going on a charter behind a steam engine or going to New Mexico and riding behind a steam engine. I felt like so many of my vacations when I was a kid involved trains. Now, I didn't really stick to it quite that hard, but, you know, I still think trains are cool, but I wouldn't call it a hobby of mine, unlike my father and my brother.
So now perhaps think a little bit about some boundary conditions, what games are on the boundaries of train gaminess. And the one that immediately leaps to many people's mind is Ticket to Ride. It's got a strong train setting. It is about traveling train routes. You're not strictly building them, you're just traveling on them. And of course, it's a very popular game, one of the great mass market games and a very successful game family. To me, it doesn't feel like a train game. When I examine that, I mean, one obvious reason is there's no financial management in there because money doesn't exist in the game. Although when we get to our next example, we'll see that that's not always the case, but that's necessary for me at least.
Sure.
The other part of it, a reason is because of the route building is not quite route building for me because the routes are already set on the map and you claim them rather than build the routes from scratch.
Sure.
So in Ticket to Ride, you cannot go directly from Chicago to Nashville. You have to go through St. Louis or through Pittsburgh, right? Yep. And that kind of just doesn't feel like quite what route building is about. But even that is, I think, not the essence of what makes it not a train game for me. And I actually been thinking about this since I shared the draft of that post with you. And that's because the other mechanism that's a dominant mechanism in Ticket to Ride is set collection. The set collection is a large part of what the game is about. You're deciding, you know, what color cards to go for. Do I want to use the wild card in this situation or not? And that just doesn't feel to me like anything to do with being in a train company or running a train company. Set collection feels a kind of alien artifact, and that kind of overwhelms the route building and makes it feel not like a train game to me.
Well, and I would actually kind of argue that the map for Ticket to Ride is actually a very fancy scoreboard that demonstrates the effectiveness of your set collection, because if you're really good at set collecting, you get to place lots of pieces out there. So it really is just a proxy for a scoreboard. Now, you certainly do tally up some points at the end of the game, but, you know, it's sort of like the route around the outside of the board where you keep track of your points during the game and then you add to that at the end. And that's how I've always looked at the map in Ticket to Ride. Curiously, Ticket to Ride sort of poisoned the well for a group of my friends in playing train games because they assumed that's what a train game was. And I'd bring up train games and they'd always like, no, I'm really not interested. And I'd ask why. And they'd just go, well, I don't think it's not that fun of a game, you know. And I finally, after a while, got them to dig into it enough to find out that what they considered a train game was Ticket to Ride, because that was really their only exposure with it. And after I got done laughing a little bit about it, I exposed them to a larger world about that and managed to convert some people into 18XX fans and Age of Steam fans and some of the other games that we'll talk about tonight that they would have never actually considered playing because they thought all train games were variants of Ticket to Ride, you know, Ticket to Ride Europe or Ticket to Ride New York or Ticket to Ride, you know, in any one of those millions of titles that they've come out with.
And that's not to say Ticket to Ride is a bad game.
But it's absolutely not
one of my huge favorites, but I don't feel of it as a train game. And that's kind of important to me because, you know, why do we even care what a train game is? For me, it's a kind of an approximation of taste in games. When I say I like train games, then that gives you information as to the kind of games I like. And, you know, if you see some random game and you go, oh, yeah, if I know somebody's a train gamer, that increases the probability that they'll like Age of Steam, but it makes no difference at all to the probability that they'll like Agricola. So it has an effect on deciding what games are interesting to you or not.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to find people that like 18XX and don't like Age of Steam and do like Cube Rails, right? I mean, if you like one, they're similar enough that you tend to like all of them. Have you ever run across anybody like that where it's, you know, they're a little more picky about I only like this thing and I don't like the others?
Two or three people in the Heavy Cardboard group are big fans of Age of Steam, but they don't like 18XX.
I can see that.
And they're lukewarm. I'm thinking of one in particular who is lukewarm on cube rails. And I think it's the stock holding there that tends to be one of the problems.
Hmm.
Also, the fact, of course, 18XX is a longer game, heavier game than Age of Steam. So that's a factor as well, I think, that comes into it. But the stock holding, of course, is quite a significant mechanism. That's a difference between 18XX and, between Age of Steam and other train games.
So I'm assuming that our general listener probably has a pretty good idea about the three of those things. But let's just give a 30-second nutshell on each one of those games and sort of what the hallmark of it is so that people can just understand what the difference between each of those types of games are, so that as we reference going forward, those types of games or what they're similar to, that we've got a touchstone that we can refer back to. So 18XX, what would you say the defining characteristics of 18XX are?
Well, certainly it's the fact that you are investors in train companies. And so a key part of it is buying and selling stocks. The game has this back and forth between stock rounds where you buy and sell stocks, and operating rounds where whoever's got the most stock in a company, and therefore is the president of that company, decides to operate that company by building track, running trains, and buying new trains. And that, to me, is a very quick description of an 18XX title.
Yeah, I think it's that tick-tock between operating round and stock rounds that really defines it. You know, are you operating as a stockholder in the stock round, or are you operating as a majority shareholder that is operating the company in the operating rounds? To me, that's really what it is. So defining characteristics of Age of Steam next.
So for Age of Steam, you are definitely playing the companies. So there's no stock notion. Each is your own railway company. You're making decisions about where to lay track in order to move cubes from where they currently are to a suitable city of the same color. And a large part of the financial management is because you start up with nowhere near enough money. So you've got to take out a lot of loans as you go and gradually get to the point where you've actually got a profitable railway. And it takes usually about two-thirds of the game before you're profitable. And then thrown on top of all of that is that, like in many of these games, turn order is really important, and it's settled through an auction, which makes the financial management even more complicated, and the auction is extremely tense.
Yeah, that is definitely the hardest part of that game, is managing the auction. It is so easy to spend yourself into oblivion just through simply getting into the bidding war against one of your friends across the table. Cube rails is one that we haven't spent a bunch of time talking about, so maybe a little bit harder to get your hands around, but let's give it a whack at it. Martin, how would you categorize cube rails?
Yeah, cube rails is definitely the hardest because it's so varied. It really comes out of the various experiments made on train games by John Burra and Winsome. He goes in a number of different directions. It's quite common for these games to have a stock-holding element, although the stock-holding is often quite different in feel to 18XX games. And the games also prioritize being faster to play and have much less rules than 18XX. I mean, in many ways, Age of Steam, you could argue, is a kind of cube rails game because it was developed at the same kind of time, in the same kind of way, in the late 90s and early 2000s. But Age of Steam really turned into its own thing. And so I think it's easier to think of them as a separate evolution now. But cube rails is the most varied of the three, in that you can come across some cube rails games that are really very, very different to each other.
Yeah, and I think we were talking right before we went on tonight about Oink games and how interesting and varied the Oink games are, and how a lot of them will exploit one particular foible. And I think you could say the same thing about cube rail games, where John had an idea for that game. And in this game, we were going to do something. We were going to try yanking on some lever. And he designed a game around yanking that lever. And as a result of that, some of his experiments are great and some of them are interesting experiments, I would say. There is a huge variety there. Some of them are super easy and super quick to teach. I'm thinking of games like Northern Pacific, where, you know, you can teach somebody to play that in like 3 minutes and away you go. And then there's other ones like Baltimore and Ohio, which often doesn't get played because people think, well, geez, in that amount of time, why don't I just play 18XX? And there's a lot of the train games we're going to talk about probably actually are cube rail games with a different skin on them, really, if I were going to put them in one of the train game families, they ultimately mostly probably fit into the cube rail family.
Yeah, I think that because it's so wide. In fact, the next game we were going to look at as a boundary game is what I would class as cube rails games, which is Transamerica. Transamerica is a very simple game. Basically, you play on a map of America. You'll dealt a hand of cards of various cities pseudo-randomly scattered across America. And then each turn, you just lay two pieces of track connecting hexes around America. And that's until somebody connects all their five cities. And that's basically it. A very, very simple game. To me, it feels like a train game because although it doesn't have any financial aspects to it, it only has the route building and it doesn't have another mechanism like the set collection of Ticket to Ride to overwhelm it. You're just totally focused on, you're trying to build a good route connection system.
Well, and one key aspect of that Martin didn't bring up is that all the routes are shared. So there's a weird sort of, there's a weird standoff there that happens because you don't want to just go build off stuff on your own. You want to wait for somebody else to build that for you. And then you can quick fork off of it to get to one of your destinations. And that timing, playing chicken with that person that's building their track and going off and building somewhere else that they're not interested in is a key part of it. The other way we play all the time is there's an expansion that came in the Transamerica, Trans-Japan thing where there's a number of colored pieces of track that only you can run on. I think there's three of them, and we always save those for crossing rivers, like the expensive double places that are right. Somebody builds a nice east-west main line, and somebody else will dump one of their colored bridges on there, so somebody else then has to build, like, three or four pieces of track just to get around that thing so that they can run around that. And that really, really makes the game a lot more, you know, that brings the sharp elbows out quite a bit more. It's a delight. Every time I've played it, you're either the first one to be done or you're sitting there going, oh, just one more piece and I'm done. Oh, then somebody ends it just right before you're going to lay that last piece. And everybody at the table, I was just lets out a grunt of exasperation when somebody does finish their route because they were this close to finishing it. Delightful game. It definitely has a train theme. I mean, my personal vote is that it's actually kind of an abstract game. It's a abstract route builder with a train theme is actually where I'd categorize this one. But I also got probably a pretty big tent view on what a train game is. So if somebody wants to call it a train game, it's a train game.
Suits me.
And we're actually structuring this episode as a, you know, bit of a lightning round on, you know, common games we've played and are they train games and how do they fit in train games? We're saving the obvious train games actually for later on to talk about them specifically. So we're doing the more boundary cases right now. I talked earlier about a couple of games, one of which I'd argue is a cube rail game, and the other of which I would argue is a near clone of that game with a different theme. And the games I'm talking about right now, and I'd love your opinion on are they train games, is first off the Alan Moon Import Only, which was a Spiel des Jahres finalist in like the mid-90s, Union Pacific, and the Uber classic from 3M Games, Acquire. So let me give you a little bit of background on both of these things. Union Pacific was the game that was done by Alan Moon, the designer of Ticket to Ride, before Ticket to Ride. And if you look at the train pieces and if you look at the map, very obviously he came up with Ticket to Ride by looking at the Union Pacific map and saying, what other game can I play on this map? Because it looks like a Ticket to Ride expansion, but it plays exactly like Acquire. You know, you instead of expanding your hotel chain, you expand your railroad lines and expand your routes on that one. And every turn you can buy shares of stock. And then every so often throughout the deck, there are dividend cards that come up. And whenever a dividend card comes up, whoever has the most shares in that stock gets paid the max dividend. Somebody else gets the small dividend. And then at the end of the game, there is a bonus for whoever has the most shares of Union Pacific, which you can then trade in your normal shares for. Fantastic game. Rules are only in German. Absolute hell on colorblind people because there's no way to tell the red trains from the green trains at all. So with the number of colorblind people in my game group, it doesn't come out very often. But that's a cube rail game, right?
I don't know. Never played it. So I can't really judge that.
Okay. And then the other side of it is, okay, Acquire actually has the exact same rule set. Or it's so near of it that the two play out very similar that periodically things happen and the shareholders get paid dividends and you're expanding out your network of hotels. Now, the way you do it's a little bit different in that you're placing cubes on a grid and building out your hotel chain. But in a lot of ways, if Union Pacific is a cube rail game, then I'd argue so is Acquire. You had to have played a choir, right?
I have played a choir. It doesn't feel to me at all like a train game. I think partly because of the extreme abstractness. I mean, yeah, you can argue that train games like Transamerica are abstract, but they are played on a map. And the map constrain what you're doing. You know, rivers cost more, et cetera, et cetera. While a choir really is a very loose grid. Also, with a choir, you don't have free choice of where to place things, right? You have to get the right tiles to place them in the right spots. And that is a constraint that doesn't exist in a route building game that would be a typical train game. So I think mechanically, it also feels kind of different.
Sure.
However, when you're talking about a choir, that immediately makes me think of something that I do feel is a train game, which is Stevenson's Rocket, which is a Rainer Knizia game, where you definitely are laying track over a map, but it has a merger mechanism that makes you think very much of a choir.
Well, and I think that most people would argue that Stevenson's Rocket would be kind of in the Cubrails family of games, wouldn't you?
I definitely count it. It's on my Cubrails list on BGG.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been a number of other designers that have come up with Cubrail games or Cubrail adjacent games, even if they're not strictly called that. I mean, like the series like Ride the Rails and Irish Gauge and so forth like that. That whole series that came out a couple of years ago. Also definitely Cubrail games, even though, you know, not in all cases designed by John Bohr.
Yeah, well, Amabel Holland, of course, she's designed quite a lot of really good Cubrails games. Iberian Gauge, Irish Gauge,
for sure.
Northern Pacific that you mentioned early on. And then, of course, there's the Dual Gauge series as well, which is another train game-oriented things. That's one of the genres that Amabel Holland is doing some really good work with.
I don't know what to think of Dual Gauge. We sort of deep dove on that one during COVID. Is it a good game? Is it a game? Is it? Like, it's weird.
Well, it's Amabel Holland, so it's got to be weird, right? I mean, she doesn't do unweird games.
No, that's definitely true, yes. Like, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say I didn't have a fun time playing it, but afterwards, it's kind of one of those, like, does this game make sense? I don't know. That one's a unique one, and certainly enjoyed the experience, and I would argue it's definitely a train game, so it fits for sure. Let's transition to one that I know is near and dear to your heart, Brass Birmingham. Trains, also canals and industries.
Yep. I mean, for me, I don't see that as a train game. And the reason is there's route building on there. There's definitely economic management and financial management. But I think the thing is, though, again, it's other mechanisms coming into play. And with Brass, it's particularly the degree to which you're focused on building up the industries in the nodes of the map. I mean, for me, the thing in most train games is you're concentrating less on the nodes. They're not very active. I mean, yeah, there's cubes in Age of Steam, or you know, you can upgrade your revenue centers in 18XX, but you're not putting a lot of attention as to what you're going to do on the nodes. While in Brass, you're very focused on, oh, do I put an ironworks here? Am I going to place a cotton mill? What industries am I going to work on? And I think that shifts that balance of mechanism thinking where it takes it away from the train game category. Although it's certainly on the boundaries because, you know, there are trains in the game. It's the Industrial Revolution. And that's obviously trains that were very, very central to that.
Yeah, I think the primary theme there is actually sort of that economic development. The, you know, I need to build up industries. I'm trying. It's more of a holistic look where the trains and the canals are just a means to an end rather than the thing you're trying to do. I've always thought of it as a financial euro, and I think that's probably the shelf I will leave it on.
Yep, I definitely see it as an economic euro. And at this point, I cannot but mention that I will be playing a version of Brass with no canals tomorrow night, I hope. As we've got,
and this has been the Gaming Moguls podcast. It's been nice having Martin Fowler on. He's been officially uninvited because I haven't gotten an invitation to this. I hate you now.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about working with Heavy Cardboard is that you get prototypes, and we got the prototype for Brass Pittsburgh, and I'm hopefully going to get to play it tomorrow. You're welcome to fly over.
Let's see, what time is it? I I'm actually heading to a gaming cabin weekend myself this weekend. So I'm going to get a whole snoot full of gaming this weekend at myself. So I will probably have to wait till all the rest of the normies get their copies.
Or you could always come to HeavyCon, and then it might be available there. Who knows?
I may very well have to do that. Because, yeah, that is, you know, number one on the list of things I'm looking forward to getting right now. I cannot wait till that comes out. It looks so great. So,
oh yeah, I've been watching I've been reading the various descriptions of it, and I'm pretty excited. I mean, I love games that take a family variation upon each other. And notice one of the things: Cube Rails, 18XX, Age of Steam. Mm-hmm. Another thing about train games is they really lend themselves to these familial variations, often based by changing maps. And most of these will have spring up sibling games or new maps where, here, take a new map, tweak the rules a bit, and that variation is one of the things that makes these games so fascinating.
Well, and I think that, you know, the team behind that has proved themselves to be very good stewards of that franchise over the years. That, you know, they took a game that was already a top 100 greatest game ever in terms of just Brass Lancashire, or just Brass as it was known back in the day, mm-hmm. and came out with what is now the number one overall game on Board Game Geek in Brass Birmingham. I mean, it's hard to do better than that.
Yep.
So the next one on the boundary condition list of train games is I'm going to talk about a game called Grand Trunk Journey. Martin, do you know anything about the Grand Trunk Journey?
Nope.
So this is a Spielworks title. It was in very, very small release. It is a train game that is a pick up and deliver train game, where everything is based around timing. It's one of those where you can kind of, you make a move, and if you deliver something far away, it takes more days. And if you deliver something close, it takes less days. And you don't make anything more, really, from delivering far. It just takes more time. And when you're out of time, you're done. So you have a set number of days that you have to do. The trick is that you get extra bonuses for delivering certain things on certain days. So you might want to deliver, I can't remember, like iron to Allegheny on the 14th day. And if you do that, you get a very large bonus for doing that. So it's all about trying to get that timing down so that that pickup and delivery that you're doing happens when the game wants to have it happen. And also, you know, there's an efficiency engine part of it too, where you only have X number of days. So if you can do more things in those number of days, and, you know, you can stagger all of your deliveries really close by, obviously you can make more deliveries than trying to run the things all the way across the map. A lot of Euro components to it. It's definitely a Euro, but it's got a very strong train flavor to it. You're delivering things, you're making money, you're driving around a map. There's no route laying. The routes are already there. But I don't know. Have you had a chance to play this one?
Nope, not even seen it.
Not even. It is a bit rare. Like, I don't see it around a whole lot. I suppose I could reach up on my shelf almost and grab it. It's within a couple feet of me, but not quite to the point. This makes great radio too, by the way. It's just, it's right there. The orange box.
Mark is now pointing at his game shelf.
All my train games are actually just over my shoulders behind me. So is it a train game? I mean, it doesn't have the things that you talk about in there. You don't make a map and you don't, there's no stocks. But I mean, you feel like you're doing train things the entire time. So maybe it's a train themed Euro. Is that the right answer? I don't know.
It could be. In that sense, it like Russian Railroads, which is another game that I don't feel like is a train game because there's no map and no route building present.
Yeah, no, Russian Railroads is way farther afield. You know, that Russian Railroads really feels abstract. You know, it's that the train theme is a millimeter thick on Russian Railroads. And whereas this one, I mean, you really have a map. You really are driving around doing train things and delivering things, and you're upgrading cities. And as train themed Euros go, the theme is pretty tasty in this one. Yeah, well, I guess we'll go with a train themed Euro on that one. My last addition to this list is one that I want to throw past you. And this came up because I was recently listening to Game Brain Crew talk about their plays of Indonesia. And as they were talking about it, they basically came to the conclusion that it was actually a train game. Now, Indonesia is a splatter game where you're building routes of ships in the Indonesian archipelago, and you're trying to deliver different resources around. There are definitely a financial aspect of it and ownership of the company. It's ships and spices and siap bhaji and all kinds of stuff like that. But is Indonesia a train game?
Well, for me, I think it's similar to how we think about Brass. because, again, with Indonesia, you are also paying attention to the industries you're placing, where you're placing the industries, what kinds of industries you're doing, and the connections, which are made through ships, but are effectively kind of a route-building element, are part of that, but somewhat secondary to that, in the same way that they are for brass. I mean, my sense is more that if you like brass, you'll probably like Indonesia, and they both have quite a good overlap with train games generally, but it doesn't have quite that same sense that it does. But I can certainly see where the feeling comes from. I recently was lucky enough to get a game of it in. We, on the Heavy Cardboard stream, we played the new third edition of Indonesia, which is such a pleasure. I mean, mm-hmm. I've played Indonesia before, and it's always seemed to me that fans of Indonesia have replaced the map and they've replaced all the components. It's yep, the only thing way true. To do it. But this, you don't need to do that anymore. The map is really nice and clear. The components are lovely to handle. They've Splotter, for once, have actually produced a game that is aesthetically and ergonomically as much of a pleasure as it is ludologically. And it's great. And thank goodness I was able to get hold of a copy, because one of the herd members had ordered one extra copy than they needed and were happy to sell it to me. So I was able to get my own copy of Indonesia finally.
Yeah, I've got the version of it that has the giant pieces, you know, the ones that are like 4X too big. So my plan is actually I'm going to make a map, like you said, everybody replaces the map. I'm going to make a map out of a neoprene mat that is scaled appropriately for the resources and use it as like a con game. So it's like a 12-foot long map and everybody runs around the map and places these giant resources on it. Then I'm going to 3D print huge. I'm going to basically use like the container ships from the giant oversized version of container. I'm going to make ships to that scale that hold those giant resources on there and just make this huge con game for playing Indonesia. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, you might want to take a look at the third edition, because it's done a number of nice ergonomic things, which I don't remember so well from the previous versions. And it may have some other tips that you can do for your wonderful, supersized Indonesia game.
There's a really cool redraw out there on Board Game Geek that I was going to base it on, that cleaned up the map a lot and made it a lot more grokkable and referenceable and so forth. And that was what I was going to base it on rather than the stock splatter map. I also have a strong aversion to the font used on there. So that one drives me crazy. So yeah, anyway,
it's not exactly easy to read, is it?
No,
especially
it is
upside
not.
Down.
Scriptina, lovely. Don't use it for games. So in planning this episode, we had all kinds of great plans of making the first 25 minutes about what's a train game, and we're 40 minutes in. So, you know, womp womp. We're not going to shortchange you. We're still going to talk about all the games we were planning on talking about. And we each have a list of train games that we've played recently that we would like to actually have a chat about. Martin, I'm going to, as a newer person to the podcast, I'm going to actually give you the talking stick first and let you pick which game you'd like to discuss first.
Well, I think that has to be 18 Royal Gorge, which is a recent 18XX game that I've actually played a remarkable amount of times in the last couple of months. So this is a 18XX game set in Colorado. Its centerpiece of the map is the Royal Gorge, which is was a strongly disputed bit of track. It involved gunfighters and Doc Holliday being involved, and a settlement in the courts of Boston to allow the Rio Grande Railway to get through there. And they've built around this an 18XX. It's very much more along the operational side of things rather than the financial side of things. 18XX typically divides into either 18XX game, financial games where you're manipulating the stocks and ownership of companies, and operational games where you're focused more on getting a company and running it well. And Royal Gorge leans more towards that end, from what I can tell. It has some interesting twists to the game. Most 18XX games, you can only build track very slowly. In Royal Gorge, you can build up to 6 tiles at once, but you've got to pay for them. And the money that you pay for the steel goes to the steel company, which you can invest in shares of, which is a nice little twist to the game rankings.
Bit of a nod to brass there, almost.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it works really well as a game-wise is it means the track gets built quickly. So you don't have a very slow start that you typically get in an 18X game. So it takes ages for you to actually get anywhere and get some decent runs going. In Royal Gorge, you very quickly build out the track. And also later in the game, you can do quite interesting track maneuvers to bypass cities that are tokened out and that kind of thing. So I think that the ability to lay lots of track, if you can pay for it, and that's, of course, the issue, you've got to be able to pay for it, is actually quite a nice little twist of the game. Then on the revenue side, really, it's gold mines. And if you build track near a gold mine, the gold cube appears and you're able to deliver it for a boost in revenue, which gives you a bit of extra money early on in the game. But it's a one-time delivery, so it's only that early game boost in money, which is actually quite a nice little twist for that. It's also, you've got a lot of train companies, but only a few of them appear in each game. So there's, I can't remember how many of companies there are, but there's only five out of, I don't know, 10 or so companies that appear in each game. So the actual, you've got a lot of variability in how each game plays out, depending on which train companies become available. So all in all, I've had a lot of fun with that game. I mean, also one of the nice things is one of the problems with being with a group like the Heavy Cardboard Group is that we're playing different games all the time. You never really get to play one game again and again and again. But fortunately, a few of us got on 18XX games to avoid the traffic and really gave it, I've played it now 7 or 8 times over the course of a couple of months. And we've really managed to dig in and get a feel for the game. And that, particularly with games like 18XX games, the ability to play half a dozen or so times in the course of just a few weeks makes a big difference to really getting a hang of the game, especially for me, because I've not really ever got the hang of 18XX games before. So this has really sort of boosted me into the genre in a way that I wasn't able to do before.
Yeah, that has been really the greatest part about the 18xx.games platform. And one of the reasons I really wish that an equivalent existed for Age of Steam. You know, I know there are some online ways to play Age of Steam, but there's so much fiddlier than 18xx or 18xx.games. And man, I would love to see an Age of Steam.games equivalent to that.
There is one. Recent one. Choo Choo Games, yes, or something it's called. And I'm told it's pretty decent, but I haven't tried it.
Because I think that's actually what I need, is I need to just get a whole bunch of reps in on top of playing Age of Steam. So I should really look into that and give that a try. Choo Choo Games?
I think it's that. I'd have to look around to... Fortunately, I wrote an article about Age of Steam on BGG, and I did reference it on there, so I should be able to find that.
I've been actually dying to give this one a try. I've heard a number of people talk about it recently and how much they've enjoyed playing it, so... you know, if there's ever a time you are firing up a game, please drop me a note. I would love to hop in and give this a go with you. You know, the normal people I play with on 18xx.games tend to have our, 12 to 15 different titles we rotate through. So I'm always up to branch outside of that and try some new ones.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to do synchronous games rather than async games, but maybe at some point we'll be able to get something together. That would be fun.
Sounds great. And 18XX games are always a little bit strange on the mogul scale, but let's give it a whirl.
Oh, gosh. Now I have to.
So just as a recap for everybody, on the mogul scale, it's a way of ranking the difficulty of games where the number part of it, which is 1 through 5, is an explanation on how complex the rules are. And the A through E lettering system is an explanation on how complex the brain load is behind the game. So 5E has a million rules and is really thinky. 1A is, I can teach you in 2 seconds, and there's kind of flipping a coin. So, and everything follows in a two-dimensional spectrum therein.
Okay, so I'm looking at comparisons, and I notice that you don't have any 18XX games on this list other than 18 Lilliput, which I don't really count.
We've kind of avoided it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. So I would put 18 Royal Gorge in where most 18XXs go. You've got Brass as a 3D. So I think rules complexity, I would put it similar to Brass. So that feels like a 3. And then in depth, it's either D or E, I would say.
Yeah, I think when we've had discussions about this in the past, I think we've decided that most 18XX games would be 4D or 4E. But that depends on whether you've played other 18XX titles. If you've played 18XX titles and it's like a 3D or 3E, And if you haven't, it's a 4D or 4E because of the fact that you can reuse so much of the knowledge from previous experience on other games.
Yeah, and also look as I look at the list again, I see Great Western Trail's a 4D. So that would argue for it being a 4D. I'd also argue that would make Brass a 4D. Because to me, those are similar degrees of rules complexity in terms, certainly for the 4. The interesting question is whether it's a D or E. And that's because 18XX, I think, does have a particular depth to it that is remarkable.
Yep. I could probably teach Brass in a third of the amount of time I could teach Great Western Trail. So that's probably why I leaned on a 3 instead of a 4. It's just a card game.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm going to follow this up, too, with a bit of an unusual 18XX game. I'm going to talk about 1890 Osaka, designed by Shinichi Takasaki, all the way back in 1999. And if you haven't heard of it, don't feel bad, because most people haven't. There's a collection of 18XX games that were designed in Japan and really never, ever found their way out of Japan. And whenever they do come up for sale, they go for just huge dollars, and they're often just cut out sheets of paper and rough cardboard boxes and so forth. And for some reason, Karim, also known as Carthaginian, who did a bunch of redraws of like 1889 and 1830, decided to redraw 1890 Osaka. I thought it looked like a cool map, so I reprinted it, only to realize that there were no English translated rules available for it. So the print and played sat on my shelf for a couple of years with nothing happening on it because I didn't know how to play it. Finally ended up, somebody actually translated it online, posted translated rules, and now suddenly I had a viable 18XX game just waiting for an opportunity to play it. And I'm dialing it back here a bit, but we actually did get a chance to pull this one off the ground at MogulsCon 2 last summer. What an interesting, bizarre experience. So ostensibly, it's an 1830 branch game. A good chunk of the rules are 1830, but it's as if you took an 1830 game and decided to make a simulation of the growth of Japanese rails in the Osaka area. So what happens is all the majors actually ultimately merge together at the end of the game to form Japan Rails West. And each of them have their own powers. And it's like watching this Voltron getting constructed, where every company has its own power. And now it merges with the other one and becomes more powerful. And then there's a mandatory merge the next round with another major. And I think every set of operating rounds, another company merges in that. And there's rules about how many shares you get if you merge in at such and such a time. And what a weird game, and just super weird privates. Some of them are really overpowered. You know, one of them has the ability that you can build 5 track at once, and another one has the ability where it breaks the train limit and has some other weaknesses. I ended up going bankrupt pretty quickly. it had the slowest start ever, and everybody was like, well, this is a boring game. And then all of a sudden it just went whoosh and was done. I think we were playing it wrong. There's one company that can have lots of trains, and that player played too conservatively, me. And really should have played that hard, not realizing how it was supposed to get played. I don't know where you'd ever find to play this one. It's actually on my list of things to do to try to get this onto 18XX games so other people can play this bit of weirdness. But the problem is it's got so many odd pieces to it that you can't just use a standard tile set. There's a bunch of just weird one-off pieces to it. So it's still on my list. Maybe with AI, I can get it done quicker. We'll see. That's 1890 Osaka. And, Martin, if we're ever in person sometime, I will definitely bring a copy of that along with me, because I think other people would find it enjoyable as well.
Yeah, that does sound like an intriguing little title.
I think if you were going to, look between stocks and operational, I think it's neither of those. It might be a simulation framed as a game, but it was still a good time, and it still had all the trappings of 18XX.
I shall move out of the train world entirely for mine, what next one, and pick Stellar Ventures. So okay. This is a game that's just going into Kickstarter, or is it just about to deliver? I can't remember. I'll have to check where its current status is. But it's the reason why we ran into it is because we did Heavy Cardboard did a playthrough of it on YouTube. I wasn't part of the playthrough, but I did get a chance to give it a try. And basically, it's cube rails in space.
Okay.
The people listening can't hear me put my arms up as I do the in space motion, but it does have very much a cube rails feel to it. You are building God knows what to put cubes down across space hexagons to connect planets together. And you also have, from 18XX, a spaceship train rusting mechanism. You start with small spaceships, and when you run out of those, they get slightly bigger, and they get slightly bigger, and eventually they get big enough to, that the smallest ones become obsolete and rust, although I don't know whether rusting actually happens in space, but, you know, something goes on to break them apart in a similar way to 18XX. What I like about the game, though, is that it really manages to keep the bookkeeping down to a really nice minimum level. Essentially, the stock payouts are based on sort of bands of how many planets you've reached. You know, if you reached 3 to 6 or whatever it is, I can't remember off the top of my head, together with what's your current capacity in terms of spaceships. And it's a simple little table, and you just sort of look up where you are on the table, and that's your payout. You've not got a complicated, you know, adding up all the revenue centers on your route or anything like that. So it's much more like the payouts and cube rails that are very much more straightforward. It's also got some other interesting twists as well to it that kind of befit its sci-fi setting. And it's just a very interestingly different take on what I feel is very definitely a train game feel with a bunch of different mechanisms. And I think cube rails in space is a good way to describe it.
Sure. Definitely sounds interesting. I love some games that are, you know, air quotes, in space, and I love cube rails, so there's a pretty good chance I'm going to like this one. So as we're talking about this, I'm looking at the description of it. And tell me about the agreement.
All right. So if you want an infusion of money, you can sign an agreement with the aliens, and you get a whole bunch of money as a result of doing that. However, if you don't have, if you, and there's then a little counter that goes up, which is the kind of aliens, I don't know, sophistication level. And you've got to make sure that the number of planets in your network is bigger than the aliens' sophistication level. If it isn't, your shares become worthless. So it really puts a kind of extra pressure and timer on the game because of that.
What I love about this is that I think this can be a wolf in sheep's clothing for my gaming friends that wouldn't play cube rail games. That's a space game. We're exploring and making deals with aliens. I think they'd be all in, Martin.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. It did go on to Kickstarter, and it's currently on. It may have finished a campaign. So obviously, by the time you're listening to this on, it's probably will have finished a campaign. Because it's very close to the end if it isn't already at the end. But I'm sure late pledges and things like that will appear. But it was a really nice little game. And I could definitely imagine getting into it if I had the time and inclination to be able to get some more games going.
And again, sitting here on the 18th of February, it ended funding yesterday. So yeah. February 17th, it closed. Well, you know what? I will definitely seek out a copy of that in the future because it sounds like something that would be right up my alley. So speaking of cube rails, we're going to stick in the cube rails vein. As I was talking about growing up in a train-forward family, in the small town in southern Minnesota that I grew up in, very close to the place where I lived, like only a couple blocks away, was not one, but two lines of the Chicago Northwestern. I grew up my entire life seeing those green and gold trains going either east and west or north and south. You know, that's what trains were to me as a kid. And it has always been a source of irritation to me that there haven't been more representation of the Chicago Northwestern. I mean, huge train company, very dominant player in Chicago, across all of the Midwest, into Wyoming, up into Michigan, Iron Ranges, et cetera, et cetera. Yet, find me an 18XX game that actually represents the Chicago Northwestern in any meaningful way. Not a thing. So that's always frustrated me a lot. So when I realized that there was a cube rail game called Chicago and Northwestern, that got on my list of games I absolutely had to have. Problem is, it was a Winsome game, and if you aren't on the Winsome subscription, well, good luck, sir. You're not going to find a copy of this. Until Rio Grande came along and reprinted it in 2023 and made it a mass market release. So, finally acquired a copy of Chicago Northwestern and got a chance to play it here very recently. So, typical cube rails game in the Wabash Cannonball family. You're investing in operating railroads. You do have limited amounts of dividends you can trigger once per game. And you also get a special dividend when it reaches its target city. And then once you, air quotes, go west, that company's out of the game completely. Pretty short playtime. And I would say this is a, you know, a fairly niche title in general. Liked it a lot. We all had a lot of laughs in it. But my main criticism would be the same that I would have with a lot of Cube Rails games. They're kind of one trick ponies, right? Nobody plays a particular Cube Rail title hundreds of times. Maybe a couple, like you could argue Chicago Express gets played a lot. Northern Pacific gets played a lot. There's a few of them, but a lot of them, you play them and you kind of go, well, that was fun. And then you go off to the next Cube Rails game and you go, well, that was fun. Something about them just, I've never not enjoyed one, but they seem to lack stickiness to me. I would say that this one kind of fit into that camp too. Like, I'm looking forward to playing it again, but I don't know. It seemed like another Cube Rail game in a pile of Cube Rail games.
That, I think, is pretty fair. And I often feel that way of Cube Rails games, is that you only really need one or two, particularly of a lot of Cube Rails games have this auction expand dividend cycle to them. You buy a share in the company through an auction. The money that you pay for the goes into the company's treasury. You then use that company's treasury money to expand by building track. And then when it, after certain points, you pay a dividend, which gets money back to you. And that cycle is true of Wabash Cannonball, of Chicago Northwestern, and many others. And the games, all of these games do have a certain similarity-ness to them as a result of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, my favorite of this family is Age of Rail South Africa, which is originally was Winsome South African Railroads, which I feel does this really nicely. And also there's expansion maps, a couple of expansion maps that go with it. It's quite nice. Chicago and Northwestern, I thought was fine, but again, not super exciting. My favorite feature about it actually was that in most of these games, the very first thing you do is you go through an auction for one share of each company. And the problem with that is if you've never played these games before, of course, you've got no idea what a sensible bid is. And so it ends up being pretty frustrating. In Chicago and Northwestern, instead of doing that, you just basically, each person basically buys one share and they can choose how much they want to pay for it. And of course, the argument to pay more is because that money goes into the company, which you can then use. If you buy a share for nothing, then the company's kind of useless because it hasn't got enough money to do anything.
You can't afford to build out.
Right. So, you know, that gives, that I think makes it a little beginner friendlier, but I don't think it really matters that much. The other thing that bothers me a bit about actually most of the Rio Grande Cube Rails games is that they really do go with the Winsome design aesthetic. I mean, if you wanted to give the sense of train games being ugly and boring and knocked up in somebody's garage, Rio Grande have gone with that in spades. I mean, it's not artistically exciting, is it?
No, there is very little artwork on this entire game. It's a, you know, it's a bunch of lines and dots for the cities and lines, dots and squares. And you've got a bunch of cubes and you've got some stock dividend shares that have the company marquee on them. And that's about it.
Yeah. And with the capstone ones, at least Ian O'Toole has taken that minimalist approach and made a bit more of it. So it doesn't look completely like it was, you know, printed off on a dot matrix printer in the 1980s. Rio Grande have gone completely with that aesthetic, and a lot of people find that kind of...
Yeah, but would it change anything? If Rio Grande decided to spend a whole bunch of money and get Ian O'Toole to make artwork for that, would they have sold any more copies of it than they had otherwise?
Probably not, but I do like playing a game that has a good aesthetic feel to it. And it's not just aesthetics. Ian O'Toole does put a lot of care into the graphic design.
Sure.
And Chicago Northwestern, actually, ergonomics-wise, is good. I don't remember any problems with it.
No.
But quite a few of the Rio Grande games do have serious ergonomic problems. And, of course, the worst of these is the flagship game, as it were, which is Wabash Cannonball, which is Chicago Express. Same game. They have different names for reasons. And it has possibly the worst map. I mean, it's not just Dot Matrix 1980s. It's done by somebody who's clearly out trolling the Winsome Games people to say, I'm going to present this utterly ugly and unergonomic map that's confusing and difficult to read. And you're going to say how wonderful it is because you're Winsome fans. And it is dreadful.
Yeah, definitely. I do think you could make a reasonable argument for the Capstone games selling more to more not core Winsome people just because of the artistic appeal to it and the fact they made it a set and they made them all match. I know a bunch of normies that own copy of Ride the Rails just because they, you know, played it once and thought it was fun. And, you know, it certainly looks a lot better than a lot of those other games. So I think maybe, you know, they probably have sold more copies because they did make them look nice.
Yeah, I think it's a factor. And also, my recommendation cube, my starting point cube rail game that I recommend is Age of Rail, which is one of the Capstone ones, partly for the aesthetics, but also I think the mechanics. It's the right blend of things. I don't want to go into why, because that would take me forever, but I think the blend is just right.
And that is one I have not played yet, so we'll add that one to the list.
Okay. My next game I'm going to very briefly almost skip over, which is to mention Steam Power. I talked about this a lot in the last episode, so I'm not going to talk about it again, other than to say that if you're looking for a one-hour, relaxed railway game experience, it's a cracker, and go for it. And I played it a lot last year. But the main one I want to actually switch to is Railway Boom. So this is an interesting game, if only because the design team. It's a combination of Hisashi Hayashi and Simone Luciani, and illustrated by Ian O'Toole. So what a combo. Hisashi Hayashi, of course, came up with Yokohama, which is one of my favorite games. Simone Luciani has come up with God knows how many games, you know, Zolkin, Barrage, Marco Polo, Grand Austria Hotel. Very solid game design combination. And then, of course, as I say, Ian O'Toole artwork. So you've got all the lots of good things here.
Well, and Hisashi has done other train games, too. He did Across the United States.
Ah, I did not know
that.
Is
that a cube rail game? No. It's definitely a train. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's. I have a copy of it. It's a lot of fun. Plays out in an hour. Maybe it's a train themed Euro. I got to think about that one a little bit. Anyway, we can probably talk about that more in some other episode, but yeah, so this is not Hisashi Hayashi's first crack at doing train games. In fact, he also did Metro X as well, which is a roll and write based in the Tokyo rail lines. If you want to play a very punishing, brain burny, scratch your head and curse roll and write, find yourself a copy of Metro X. It's really punishing.
Okay, I'll look for it. So Railway Boom is very hard to get in the United States at the moment. I got to play it partly because one person was really determined. Actually, I got it basically because people got it at Essen. From our group, Shrey and Derek went out to Essen as part of a group, not so much for the heavy cardboard, but because they buy games for our Lobster Trap convention in New England. And one of them they picked up was Railway Boom. It's an interesting twist on train games. It's train games with even more auctions than you thought could fit in a train game. Because each round has a series of, so that you go through a series of different phases in each round. So the first phase is you buy train locomotives and carriages. And the second is you build out some route. And the third is you add technologies. And for each of these activities, you have a resource that you pay for it. So if you want to buy train carriages and locomotives, you spend wood. And to develop track, I think you spend, I can't remember. I think it's money or maybe iron or something. I can't remember now. But it's a different resource for each action. And then in each case, you've got a menu of things to choose from. Whoever goes first will get to pick from all of the items. And then the choice declines as you go down. So obviously, going first is important. How do we decide who goes first? It's an auction. What's your currency you're spending in the auction? It's the thing that you're using to buy the thing that you would get at the end of it. So for railways, you have to bid in wood to then spend wood to get your train. So you got this lovely trade-off because, yeah, well, if I bid too high, I won't have any of the money left to buy the thing that I actually want to buy. It's a really interesting mix of these things. The route building is relatively attenuated, which, you know, I'm not so keen on because I really love route building, but all the other aspects are just really interesting. I played it twice recently, and if you are interested in the kind of train games we've been talking about, I would definitely keep an eye out for it. I would mention that Rado rated it as his all-time favorite train game. So it's definitely something to pay attention to.
And knowing Rado, that also probably implies the fact that it's not very elbowy.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount. There's a little bit of blocking in there. But most of the competition is in this auction. Because you look at what's available on the offer and you say, okay, how much do I want to bid to get first dibs at those things? Or, you know, am I completely happy being last? Or do I want to try and bid a little bit so that I'm kind of in the middle of the pack?
Yeah, this has popped up on my radar recently, and a lot due to the provenance of the people designing it. So hopefully they'll actually do a release of this in the United States, because I would really love to try this.
Yeah, I think it is coming. It's just going to take a while. It'll maybe later this year or something like that before they actually get the US release.
Given the people in there and so forth, how would you rate this one on the Mogul scale?
Oh, crikey. I've played it twice, right? So that makes it interesting to figure. Rules weight feels 2 or 3. Let me look at what the comparable games are so that I'm remembering what I'm comparing it to. I'm thinking rules weight is probably 3. With all the different auctions and things, there's a fair amount going on. Yeah, I think I'd give it 3, very Yokohama-ish. And actually, depth, it could be more, but I probably started to see. That would be good, because it would compare it to Yokohama, where I feel it does actually have a good comparison base too.
That sounds like where about I would place it based on your description of it as well. So, Railway Boom by Hisashi Hayashi, Simone Luciano, and Ian O'Toole. The last one I'm going to wrap things up with is probably the longest, heaviest, and most punishing of the train games we're going to talk about today. It's a game I picked up at Gen Con a couple of years ago, based on them basically fire sailing it out, which I was kind of surprised about, given how well the game was reviewed. I picked it up for maybe $30, given that it's a big, heavy box with a lot of game in there. And I'm talking about Capstone Games' Imperial Steam. So Imperial Steam is set in 1840s Austria. You're trying to build a railway from Vienna to Trieste. And it's basically worker placement and engine building. So is it really a train game? Probably not. It's probably a train-themed Euro, but we're going to go with it. The one thing there is, though, is there are stocks involved with this. And one of the cracking things about it is that the stocks may or may not have value depending on whether somebody reaches Trieste or not. A lot of rules to this one. I mean, it's a very intense teach, and that's part of the reason I haven't played it as often as I would have liked, and a fairly long playtime. But I thought it was great the first time I played it. Martin, you said you had played this one before?
Yeah, it was a few years ago, possibly during a Kickstarter or not, or just after it was released, something like that. And I played it 3 or 4 times because we did practice it and needed a couple of games before we streamed it because it takes a bit of getting into. I have very mixed feelings about it. I mean, it is the kind of economic game I like because you're building factories of different goods. You're trying to make sure you've got the right materials to build the various tracks in the different places requiring different materials. It's nicely elbowy because you're competing for the track placements with other people. But the rules do weigh pretty heavily. And the worst thing of it is that I think every game we played, somebody would get wedged. And by wedged, I mean you're in a position where you just can't do anything. You've got yourself into a hole. And all you can do is pass or, you know, take a dollar or whatever. You've got no decision to make for about half an hour while everybody else is playing the game. You're twiddling your thumbs. And then finally you're out your hole and you're actually able to do something. I personally feel being wedged is one of the worst things that can happen to someone in a game because you are really stuck. And it's like you're not playing it. You're not making any decisions. And it's just very frustrating and very boring. And it's happened to somebody every time. Now, this could well, I can see the argument that says, well, they played badly. And if you play better, you wouldn't get wedged. But it's just too easy to do, it seems, in this game. And then it's not fun when it happens to you, as it happened to me in one game. And it's not really that much fun when you see it happen to somebody else. And they're just sitting there glumly, waiting desperately for you to finish all your stuff so that they can hopefully do something next round.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of times that that falling behind and getting wedged happens really early in the game. You know, there's some spots sort of early in the game at the top of the map where you can blitz to get an early payout. And if you're kind of not part of that first round of payouts, you definitely get stuck in a place where you don't have the resources to move forward in the game.
Yeah, and it's not just that you're out of contention for winning the game or something like that. I mean, I've been out of contention in a game, but I can still find something to do. I can still set a goal. It may be not come last, or in one or two games of Age of Steam, it's can I make it through to the end of the game without going bankrupt? You've got something you're trying to do, and you're trying to make progress towards that. But when there's just literally nothing you can do other than go pass, pass, then it's really not much fun.
Yeah, especially given the, you know, hour-ish teach plus the, you know, 2 to 3 hour playtime. If you're playing quick, I mean, I think it was probably 4 the first time we played it. Having said that, I mean, it is very interactive. You're definitely racing people to places. You're definitely trying to get to key cities before other people are. You're trying to establish industries in those cities before you're trying to get there. You're trying to leverage, am I going to use my resources to get a payout when I get to that town, or am I going to use that to actually build more rail? There's always that push-pull in there. So it is a very highly interactive game. But like you said, it's no fun being in an interactive game if you can't interact.
Yeah, it's a game I want to like. It's got lots of the elements that I like in a game. But as I said, that wedge risk thing was the reason that I didn't feel that I wanted to play it that much more.
Yeah, wouldn't you argue, though, the same thing happens with a lot of splatter games?
Oh, yeah. I've played Food Chain Magnet 3 times. I would like to play it again to find out if I can have an enjoyable experience of playing Food Chain Magnet.
I've played it once, so I can fully empathize with your feelings on that one. I've played that once. I've played Great Zimbabwe once. I've played it twice. And I know a lot of people lift that as their favorite game ever. And did not have an enjoyable time with any of those games anytime, partly because I just couldn't grok the flow of what was going on in the game. And I got so far behind, I couldn't do anything, and it was not a great experience. So, you know, I think the pros and the cons of that type of game for Imperial Steam are both a strength and a weakness of it. And anyway, it's an interesting game. I certainly would like to give it another whirl on that one. I suspect that with multiple plays, you could probably figure out how to play in a manner that doesn't get you wedged or minimally wedges you. I think there is a skill factor there. Now, would you play it enough times to get to that point? That's a valid question. Curiously, I see the same thing with Barrage often, where, you know, we have my friend Eric notoriously will not play Barrage. To his credit, he tried it 6 times and got wedged every single time. And I'm not even sure how that's possible. Like, yes, it's an unforgiving game. And yes, it can be rough, but I've always found it not too tough to avoid the worst of that, but he's proof to the opposite. So even amazing games like that will eat people alive. So anyway, that's Imperial Steam. If I'm going to rate this on the Mogul scale, it's probably a 5D maybe. It's rulesy. The rules are long in this one.
Yeah. What have you got for 5 rules? Well, if Lisboa was a 5, mind you, Lisboa and High Frontier are both at 5, right? So I see a big difference with those. But 4 or 5 in terms of rules. And I mean, I'm going to only give it depth of C because I wasn't able to get far enough into the game to find out if it had more strategy to it.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of push and pull in there on which direction do you go, how do you handle the shares, how do you handle... There is quite a bit there, but certainly not to the level of an 18XX game where everything is wide open and you can do anything you want and there's levers to pull all over the place. So definitely not an E. That is our look back at some of the great train games we've played over the past year and our view on train games. Martin, as a huge train aficionado, I've been really looking forward to doing this episode and that was a super fun time.
Yeah, well, it was good to talk about this category since it was a whole category we had to leave off our last discussion.
For sure. And, you know, I'm actually pretty regularly playing various 18XX titles on 18XX.games, so I can only talk about 1849 so many times. So I left that off the list as I did about 1848 and several other ones. But I was looking for new ones to try, and you have once again given me some fuel for the fire to try again going forward. So, Martin, any closing words for everybody?
No, other than hope you enjoy looking out for, we're giving some interesting things for you to try. Some games to keep an eye out for when they hit in the future. And look out for those.
Might be worth having a discussion in the future, too, about, you know, we talked a lot of the heavier train games. I think there's a whole side topic we could do sometime on entry-level train games, on, you know, what are the gateway drugs to train games? You know, because we didn't even go into things like Northern Pacific or Mini Rails or something like that that have a lot of those tropes in them. But teach in 5 minutes and play in 30. Maybe a good topic for another night.
Yep, that so, could be certainly something to probe into.
Excellent. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap her up tonight. Once again, for the Gaming Moguls, I'm Mark Teske.
And I'm Martin Fowler.
Good night, everybody.
This has been the Gaming Moguls Podcast. Please find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Feel free to join our Board Game Geek Guild, Guild number 3431. Find us on Instagram and Twitter, @GamingMoguls. Or reach us via email, jake@gamingmoguls.com or mark@gamingmoguls.com. If you like the Gaming Moguls podcast, please tell a friend. Thanks for listening.